Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Simply Safe. If you have 30 minutes, well, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. That's how long it takes to set up your Simply Safe system. SimplySafe.com/Adam. Choose all the sensors you need, and you can get help from their experts, and it's going to show up in your house in about a week. Get your custom system and free security camera at SimplySafe.com/Adam. Teresa Strasser joins us again to delve into the meaning of life. Cassandra Peterson, a.k.a. Elvira, jumps on, too, to tell us about her dust-up with the Stilt Chamberlain. So much to get into today. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey guys, Jay Cutler. Started a new podcast called Uncut with Jay Cutler. Most of you know me from the NFL, some of you have seen me on Instagram, and some of you know me from the reality TV world. Each week I'm taking you along with me as we discuss football, trending topics, and whatever's going on in my life each week. I'm bringing along people that are special in my life, former teammates, friends, and some new people that I like and respect. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Podcasting? I think I'm doing this right. Can't wait to get started with you. Go subscribe now. Uncut with Jay Cutler, Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the author of the new memoir, Yours Cruelly, Elvira, Cassandra Peterson. Plus, comedian Rosebud Baker, with Teresa Strasser filling in on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, Mr. of the Dark, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church has got a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Right, Teresa Strasser?
I am very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Bald Brian?
30 meetings in 30 days.
That's my dad.
Oh, right.
There was an incident at your wedding.
Yes. Gina Grad just got married Sunday at my wedding. My cousin, who was married to a guy from the band Warrant,
he had
a few drinks.
Stop it.
Oh, right.
And my dad, who's like 5'9", a buck 45, said, I'm sorry, you're acting out of hand. You got to take it down a notch. And he said something like, I'm going to snap you like a twig.
Wow.
You know, like he threatened him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then when he called my dad to apologize a couple days later, my dad told him, I accept your apology, but I'd like you to go to 30 meetings in 30 days.
I feel
she's my cherry pie. Cool drink of water.
Could you strip to this though? Could you?
Well, this is the mournful version.
This is after the stripper. This is after the mount on the pole comes loose and she goes
tragic.
Ass over tea kettle and has a brain hemorrhage.
Does she leave behind children?
Yes. She does. They always do.
It's a sad affair.
Hey, can I say this apropos of just this song, but and I got to get into this drunken thing for a second. But if I open a strip club, my rule will be for all the strippers, if in fact you have kids, and a fair amount of them have very young kids.
Yeah.
The car seat has to leave the car before you pull onto the premises.
Oh,
because later on, when you hook up with some high rollers from the champagne room and you're in Vegas and they want to keep the party going and they walk out to the Cherokee and they see the child seat front and center, that is a boner killer there.
Like a used juice box?
Yes,
yeah.
A Capri Sun on the passenger seat. All gone. Obviously, any stickers, a baby on board, or the family in the background who likes wakeboarding, a decal on the back window. It's all gone, and I'm doing this for you.
proud mother of an honor student bumper
You
sticker.
Want to maximize.
That's on there, Teresa.
This brief relationship that you're going to have with these guys from Indiana, back at the hotel, back at the Luxor. You want to get rid of that child seat. I've seen those before.
By the way, not easy to cover a C-section scar. And that's right. Another issue.
Right. Well, that's where the bustier comes down, but it doesn't
not
come
up.
Off.
Yes.
Not up. Bustier down. So my speech to the ladies
I'm super
is
depressed right
bustier
now.
Down, yep. Car seat out. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We got all the prepositions.
Now for the drunkenness.
Yes.
Tell me if you guys would sign off on this. We had at the show in San Diego, we did have the super drunk chick out there. Middle age, super drunk chick, just yelling. You know, she's just one of those people where they're in the audience every once in a while. It's usually the middle-aged woman, and you go, all right, I want to talk to you about, and they go, no! I don't know what it means or how it works, but the answer is no, is what they yell at. And she just kept doing it.
It's not heckling anything specifically. It's just making yourself known, like a minor bird.
Right.
She's somebody who feels she doesn't have a voice in life, and this
right.
is her moment.
Which is true.
It would be nice.
But
she's
now,
in tune with her irrelevance.
It's not, I always say,
maybe that from Gina.
Like the guy walking out with the ostrich skin cowboy boots, it's not his fault, it's the spouse's fault.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Because there is a semi-sober middle-aged dude sitting
right there.
4 inches from her that will not intervene.
I feel this way when I see a man whose eyebrows are real fucked up and I know he's married.
Mm.
What the fuck's your wife doing? That's on her.
I think she's doing his eyebrows is what I think and
or
saving
just ignoring him.
$26. But yes, you're right. It's exactly right. Whose job is this? This is your. They are the gatekeeper. Fellas, when you're sitting next to this super drunk Karen who's shouting shit at the stage repeatedly, you must intervene. Now, instead of the posture, what you see is the guy sitting next to her is kind of leaning away from her.
Right.
He needs to lean into it.
Yeah.
And I'm now wondering,
what was up with my cousin that she let her man act a fool?
I think there needs to be, just like in many relationships, a safe word.
Oh, like
I think there needs to be a drunken safe word. Because dude maintain, or you're drunk. By the way, you're drunk only meets with I'm not drunk slurred back and slobbered back on you.
Right.
There needs to be that word, that Niagara Falls, you know, that that word that lets your spouse know. And by the way, don't use it after one wine cooler.
Oh, it has no meaning.
At noon when the guy gets up off the sofa and trips on a slipper or something. Don't use it then.
No.
Only use it in public settings. Use it sparingly,
right.
You know, weddings, comedy shows, things of that nature, but have a drunken safe word. I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Okay.
That'll be for you to decide
right.
with your spouse, but each one should have a drunken safe word. And once you play, you know, in relationships, you make like certain rules, like, you know, if you, you know, there, I don't know, there's some people that just, they hate Thai food. So it's like, they'll go out and eat everywhere, but they won't eat the Thai food. Look, once you use, it's agreed on that
certain
once you
parameters.
Use that word,
right.
the person then knows they're drunk and then has to zip it.
I think this is a great idea. I think there's an issue in this case, which is that there was a massive power differential because my cousin married like a rock star guy and at their wedding was Tommy Lee, etc. So I think maybe she didn't feel she had the agency to, even if she'd had a safe word, to go like moose. Like,
well, I will.
You know what I
will,
I mean? Like,
yes. I will
you're
say
embarrassing
this.
Yourself.
I will say this. This reminds me of the parents that don't have any control of their kids. And they're like, what do you want me to do? He's going to do what he's going to do. Once your spouse can blow like well over a 0.09, then you are the parent.
Yep.
You
yeah,
must you
true.
Become you're de facto parent. Your kid doesn't drive, and neither does your spouse once they're loaded when you're coming
you're
home.
They crap their pants in both cases.
Mm-hmm. You are the parent.
If you ever bought the toilet.
That's right. So let's establish that. If
do
in
you
fact
want a
you
safe
need
word,
it.
You know what? I was just thinking, the only person in your immediate circle that ever really got at hand that I saw is Ray.
Well, that's Ray's default setting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And there was a charm to it, like at the Playboy Mansion. He had his charms, but he was so physically powerful. There was also, like, there was no way I would use a safe word in any situation.
Right. Well, hence the DTR parties, the Don't Tell Ray parties.
Sure.
So we eliminated the use of a safe word. Now, the other thing with the safe word is, I think in this case, if it's going female to male, is there has to be the understanding that there will be no sex if the safe word is used again. Again, because there's a good chance that guy's loaded. He's at a wedding. He's super horny. And he thinks there's something, there's a pot of pussy waiting for him at the end of the rainbow that night, right?
The safe word is a hard stop.
Safe word is a hard stop. If you have to bust out the safe word twice, the knees get spot welded
together.
No, I like
that you build in both the carrot and the stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have to say this twice, no pot of gold.
Right.
Much like Niagara Falls, you mentioned offhand, you'd be lucky to have an incident in your shared past with your spouse. Like, you remember what happened in Maui? Remember what happened in, wherever, San Diego? So the safe word could be, hey, San Diego.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, shit, not again.
Yes. You will bring up, this would be Teresa's wedding, I guess.
Library.
Yeah, you just bring up,
downtown library.
A word that will encapsulate and bring us all back to that day that was discussed the following morning.
That's right.
In great detail.
Precipitated the safe word.
Right.
It may have been the thing that got him sober.
Oh, he's sober?
Because they're still married.
Oh, is he sober now?
I believe so.
Meetings in 30 days.
Maybe
he did.
And by the way, how about my dad for stepping to him? Because he's kind of a bigger guy and he was belligerent. And my dad's just a tiny, bony, old Jewish man.
Your dad's lost weight, if it's possible.
I know.
I think his instincts as a parent kicked in.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Even if it took 34 years.
Thank you.
For that
to
surface in
him. Thanks for being so paternal now after you won custody and then gave me back to my mom. True story.
Yes.
He had saved up all of his protective instincts for my wedding.
Yeah, that spirit, which usually comes out before the dad leaves the hospital with the newborn, took a scant 34 years.
it was a delay.
Like a bulb that you plant that doesn't bloom for three decades.
Some people are late bloomers.
Late bloomers.
How about you stepped in when my stepmother was throwing a lamp at my head?
Too soon.
The bulb was still on the ground.
The cement hadn't hardened.
Yeah.
Speaking of step parents, we didn't get into this in yesterday's wedding discussion, but it's so funny when Gina, who's working hard to be the number one stepmom on the planet, working vows in with the young stepson and everything else.
Very sweet.
Beautiful.
It was wonderful, except for there was me and Dan Dunn, who had a bad step-parent.
Oh, really?
And we were discussing, comparing and contrasting the chasm between our step-parents and Gina. Yes. This is a relatively new thing, I think.
Where step-parents are good?
Cool step-parents?
I feel like in the past, when, and maybe it's just an overall sort of zeitgeist of where our society is going, but in the past, the kid from the previous relationship was somewhere in between a pickup truck that was up on blocks in the driveway that the stepmom kind of wanted him to get rid of, and herpes from a previous relationship.
Yes.
This was a vestige of another relationship, and look, it'd be nice if you could kind of handle it and it didn't come up very often.
The term redheaded stepchild exists for a reason.
Or how about, is it Cinderella?
Cinderella, the evil stepmother.
It's a part of like the mythology of almost every culture because there's a primal thing like that's biologically not my kin.
It was understood. So the kid was considered negative baggage from the previous failed relationship.
For example, like if you were remarried and you said, I'm taking into, now we're moving in together and I shall be bringing the taboo poster into the home.
Mm-hmm.
And your new wife would be like, ugh, do I have to?
Right. But that.
I don't like that. It's not my style.
But what are our choices?
Yeah. We're going to have to do it.
We're going to have to do it. And by the way, that's why I have multiple tablets, two posters, because I do not have to desecrate the current resting place in order to have one at the new home.
Yes, good. No, this, I do agree with you. This must be a new phenomenon.
Well, it was.
I had a good stepdad, though. Did you? I thought you had one good step parent.
Well, I had a stepdad who was just sort of hands off.
And, yeah,
you know, you could do, yes, you do what you want. I'm not really here to do this or do that, you know, but, you know, good enough guy, but not what you want. Is you want some overcompensation. You want a new broom sweeping clean. You
right.
want the, I am going to prove to you why I'm so much better than the last. I also feel like step parents will kind of take a page from the existing parents, which is my parents were not excited about their kids in any way, shape, or form. So the step parent kind of enters and goes, well, if the biological parent's not that into it, then why should I be that into it? Or who wants to create this scenario where I'm twice as into it than the biological parent?
They're going to blend into the harmony that is already in the home.
Yeah, they're kind of like, you know, if it's sort of like if the boss is going to show up late, then eventually the employees will show up late. It'll just sort of, or the football coach, if he's going to call practice early, or, you know, it's his, he will set the tone for the relationship. So my parents didn't set a positive tone. But I still think the thing where the step parent coming in needing to be the number one most liked parent is a new thing. And I like it, although it probably has its limits.
Right. Yes, I agree. My stepdad was, it was interesting because my stepmother was almost as bad as you could be. I got to talk to, what's his name? Dan Dunn? We could compete.
Yeah.
But in contrast, my stepdad was extremely supportive and we were very close. And I actually planned his funeral. Like I really was a daughter. But we didn't have any baggage that my mom and I had. Because he came into the picture later in life. And also, my mom was pretty high strung, as you can imagine. And he was very calm.
Nega, I assume.
Man of color, perhaps?
Yes.
I recall that.
I recall he had, like, that was when you had record albums. And my mom had hers, which you can, you know, you got your Cat Stevens and your Carole King and your Simon and Garfunkel.
Starlight Vocal Band. And
All that.
Sky rockets in flight. So she had the white section.
Yes, and then he came in.
Some soul.
Al Green, Sam Cooke,
your
Spinners.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
No,
that's
talking.
There he is.
Wow.
Yeah, Ron Davidson. He was a trumpet player.
Yeah.
Not unlike your dad.
Yeah, although could he play the trumpet?
That was his profession.
No, well, then he was like, unlike my dad.
Yeah, he played with a bunch of Motown bands when they were touring. They'd take a horn section. By the way, his brother Lamont was also a horn player, and his life was saved in Vietnam because they needed a band. And so
it's my dad. Did you ever buy him a $3,000 trumpet?
Shit.
Yeah,
they're,
I know,
expensive. Wait, you bought your dad a $3,000 trumpet?
Well, first off, you can go to Amazon and buy.
I mean, come on, you can hear the dollar signs.
Yeah.
Wait, is that taps? What is that?
It's getting close to taps. Oh, he's saying the song he's playing?
Yeah.
He's just running through some scales. Now, what?
In order?
What I'm saying with my dad. My dad's take on the $3,000 trumpet versus the one that's $289 on Amazon is you wouldn't give Lance Armstrong a Huffy, would you?
I would not.
Right. But what if Lance Armstrong couldn't really ride a bike very well?
I would start
won a Tour de France or was sponsored or made a penny.
Or a Huffy.
Right. That was kind of my take. Well, he thought of himself as
in his
Louis
mind.
Lance Armstrong. Thank you.
Lancey.
Lancey Armstrong.
Stop it.
That's
it
who
right
he
now.
Thought. God, so he was like, it. I can't play a cheap trumpet. I'm Louis Lance Armstrong.
Right. I understand.
But I think he probably could have got around.
Wait, how do you end up financing this trumpet?
Well, I made this big mistake years ago with my family. I became successful.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Hope you learned your lesson.
Well, right. Against all odds.
And then, you know, now you have to mix the negative of people wanting money.
Right.
And then the negative of me being successful as well.
So it was a lose-lose.
It was lose-lose. They didn't like either side of it. But it was understood that I had trumpet money. You know what I mean? Like some people have FU money.
Yeah.
I had trumpet. TU money.
You know what's my oh God, please. My husband and I.
Scared
still,
you're going to start dancing?
Yeah.
If the notes he doesn't
my
play.
My body's going to take over. Mm-hmm. My husband and I still quote your mom because she still had one of the all time best lines ever.
Mm, let's see if Brian knows it.
Well, what's the setup?
Well, she was competing. Your biological mother was competing with Dave Damashek's mother. To see who knew you best, your own mother or the mother of the guy that was doing the sports on your show.
How should I know?
That's it. So my husband and I, at least once a week, are like, how should I know?
How would I know that?
How could I possibly know?
I don't think people really can
wrap. How can you possibly expect me to answer that?
It's my favorite drop ever.
Well, it is. All right. So I think people really need to wrap their mind around this sort of math of what was going on.
Okay.
We were essentially doing a trivia competition.
Right.
Like Gina loves the Sopranos.
Yes.
So we would go, okay, you love the Sopranos. My mom loves the Sopranos. Let's see who knows more about the Sopranos.
In this case, it would be Gina versus like Dave Chase.
Right.
A Sopranos contest. And that's why it would be funny.
Right. Now, it would be as if David Chase said, how would I possibly, how could you know that?
Know. Well, how could I possibly know?
Well, obviously, it'd be an insane process if you were incarcerated and didn't have access to a radio or anything. Then it wouldn't.
It would be.
Let's just say you were abroad. You were doing your missionary work in Africa or something for 7 months and we brought you back. But considering you get up at 6 a.m. and you have access to a radio, and then ironically, Dave Damashek's mom lived in
Pittsburgh,
where we were not syndicated.
She had to go to great lengths to access the show and listen to every minute of it.
Right. So she listened to every minute of the show, and then we would say things like, what is the name of our black intern? Which, if you listen casually, you would know Geron was our black intern. And my mom's answer was an annoyed, how would I possibly know? Which, by the way, highlights two very strong characteristics of my mom. One is, instead of sort of taking a step back and feeling a little bit of shame and kind of like laughing it off or trying to make it like, I'm sorry, Mr. Celebrity, I can't listen to every second of the show or something. She was pissed that she was being asked to do this.
Yes.
She was annoyed.
She didn't want to be part of the bit at all.
How can you possibly expect me to answer that?
But possibly expect her to answer trivia questions for the show.
Also, it wasn't anything that difficult. A casual fan would have been able to answer the question.
And it was free.
Well, here, if anyone was
you won $10,000, right? Wasn't there a cash prize?
No,
I don't think
that
so.
Was my dad.
That was Pops.
That was the trivia of you have to name the last radio station I was on in L.A. for a decade. And you have to name my partner on the show. And maybe the call letters for the...
One of the questions was name either the call letters or the number or the station. Like two of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Well, too busy practicing those scales. And it
paid
off.
It paid off.
My dad comically once said, I'd like to come on your radio program and talk about X, Y, or Z. And I said, all right, what, when? And he goes, Friday, 7 o'clock. I go, Dad, the show starts at 10 p.m. and it's not on Fridays. We've been doing it Sunday through Thursday at 10 o'clock for 8 years in your city. You want to come by Friday about 7.
Everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah.
How could he possibly be expected to know what time the show airs?
Imagine being raised by that woman.
I can.
So just just angry and annoyed the entire goddamn time.
How would I know that?
How would you know Jimmy Brusca's name? He's really a producer of the show.
One step away. Tune in.
How would you know? You would have to listen sporadically.
But is your
throughout
dad,
the week
is Pops Carolla, who by the way did come in to play his trumpet at my radio wedding, if you remember that, is he still seeing patients?
He has a handful of patients that are on the East Coast that he does phone sessions with on like Saturdays. That's
so any music therapy or just straight up talk?
It's a great show. A lot of fun.
No, just talk.
That's impressive. I mean, he's getting on in years. He's still vital.
Well, I think I agree. The lesson we can glean from all of this, which is and look no further than this father, and I'll tell you why. The lesson we can glean is everybody has something they like. You know, my father.
Go on.
All right, my father likes the trumpet. And, you know, my mom likes baked goods from Fairfax, right? And
hell yeah.
So anyone will do whatever. Everyone has what they like. Brian likes sushi. Mm-hmm. And or everyone likes sushi that I know.
He likes USC sports.
There you go.
Oftentimes, young kids don't like sushi. So if the parent says, we're going out to dinner, we're going to sushi, We're gonna eat raw fish, and it's sort of not fair to the kid. But it's not like you don't go to sushi; you like sushi. So here's what I'm saying: as a parent, you could probably pick. There's probably some ratio, some diagram, which basically says how much stuff do you do that you really don't want to do. Mm.
Sure, that's all parenting.
That's
is.
All parenting. Yes. Is. That's all.
Especially
that's
in the early years.
Oh, yeah.
Now, once in a blue moon. You get Sonny, who loves watching football with the guys. And I love watching football with the guys. And then that's win-win as a parent because you become a good parent. We go, come with me to watch football with the guys. And then you get it. And there's versions of that. I am, I rearranged my schedule today so I could go watch Natalia's home volleyball game.
By the way, I heard she was playing varsity as a sophomore.
She's on varsity as a sophomore, and I had something scheduled this afternoon, but I found out she told me that the game, she'd have a home game, she'd like me to be there.
Nice.
So I said, fine, I will cancel the schedule and I will go watch volleyball. Now, I would never go watch volleyball in person, but I'm doing something I wouldn't do because I have a daughter who does that. Now, you want to go the next level of parenting.
Yep.
And by the way, driving Natalia to school yesterday, I told her, well, now it's in the North Gym and I'm excited to go watch you play. And she said, I rolled my ankle. I won't be playing.
Aww.
And I said, I'm going anyway. Because I canceled a bunch of crap, and I will be there. And then she explained to me it was a blackout game, which means you wear black. Unclear what that.
What is that?
The significance of that is.
Well, I've heard of whiteouts.
Show fan. You've heard of whiteout games.
But isn't that like it distracts your eye? So
it's
strategic?
No. I think it's more like fan unity than any actual.
Oh, that's
like
nice.
The Miami Heat do whiteout games. Penn State does whiteout games.
Yeah.
So is she sidelined with the injury?
She's sidelined with a rolled ankle, but I'm going anyway. But
she sits with the team, though, so you can't even really sit together.
Right. So that's So there's three strata of parenting. There's my parents who are at the bottom, which is we only do stuff
that we want to do.
What we want to do.
You can come.
And we don't want to do anything.
Right.
That was pop water.
Right. So that's that's bad. That's the bottom. Right.
Yes.
Then there's the middle. I'm a little more in the middle, which is I don't really want to go watch girls play volleyball, but I shall go anyway because it's the right thing to do. And then there's the third, which is the parents that really get into whatever the fuck their kids are into, no matter what.
They're wearing the jersey?
Yes.
Oh, I'm. You know I'm a sports mom.
I know.
And there's plenty of moms with their kids' number on their jersey.
Right.
Yeah, I can't do that. I will be there. I will never miss a game, but I'm not wearing your number yet.
So that's the next level.
Get that scholarship, kid. Maybe I'll consider it.
Think about it.
Then there's a fourth level, which is the parent with the jersey who's gone so deep that they're fist fighting the other parents with, and that's where you got to bring it back down to the third level again, or you're out attacking a referee or an umpire.
Safe word.
Right.
Safe word.
Right. Bring it down. Mm-hmm. That's, but parenting, you want to toggle somewhere between the second and third strata there.
At the top, where what you're describing is in the movie Hoosiers, where when he's coaching, right?
Shooter?
That's right.
Shooter.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper.
That's, you don't want to be there.
No.
Sort of stumbling onto the court drunk.
Do not be there. But theoretically and hopefully, your kid at some point may take an interest in restoring your own old vintage automobile in the garage, and then you can do that for the weekend or what have you.
And
that's where it comes together.
No, Brian's daughter loves baking, and so does his wife. So now it's a win-win because this is what she would like to be doing anyway. Now she can be with her kids.
It's a little partner, a sous chef.
Yes. All right. Let me tell you about Simply Safe because Cassandra Peterson is going to join us. She just wrote a book and has lots of interesting revelations. I'm counting on you, T, to ask the tough questions.
All right.
Simply Safe. They have a wireless outdoor security camera. Big news. They've just launched their new wireless outdoor security camera. The system, U.S. News and World Report, named the best security of 2021. Well, it just got better. Engineered with the advanced tech and security features to help keep your family safe. Ultra wide, 140 degree field of view. Keep watch over the entire yard. 1080p HD resolution, and you can zoom it up to 8 times. You can clearly see and capture critical evidence like faces and license plates and the such. Got a built-in color night vision, our spotlight and color night vision, and it just takes minutes to set up. They have a rechargeable battery. You don't need to hardwire it. You don't need an outlet. Just charge it. The battery lasts a long time. Learn more at simplysafe.com/Adam. And they're also offering the new camera, and they're celebrating it with 20% off your entire system when you use their first month of monitoring service, and that'll be free as well. So go to simplysafe.com/Adam. All right. Elvira, Cassandra Peterson, is up next. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Kirkwood, New York. A 25-year-old man was charged with burglary, robbery, criminal possession of stolen property, and aggravated cruelty to animals. The man was arrested after a local resident reported his ATV had been stolen. The suspect was later found holding an axe, covered in blood, and naked in a chicken coop. Definitely not a Jew.
Cassandra Peterson is with us. She's on the phone, so we cannot see her. But I'll tell you that Teresa Strasser and Bald Brian are here with
Hi.
Us as well, Cassandra.
Hello.
Yours cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark. Oop, of the Dark. You got us? It's available now on Amazon. So, Cassandra, good to speak to you.
Yeah, you too. Good to see you again after a long time.
Yeah, so I think we should start close to the start. I always knew you were a groundling. I knew you got there, I guess, in 79. We were kind of discussing you and Pee Wee Herman and where that landed on the calendar, on the timeline. But let's go back to the groundlings days and then just talk about how Elvira was even created.
Okay. I think I started the Groundlings more like 77 or 78. I don't know, around in there. But Phil Hartman, Paul Rubens, John Paragon, who became our writing partner 27 years and played Jambi the Genie on Pee Wee's Playhouse, were all in the Groundlings at that time. And I really didn't have any characters. I wasn't, strangely, for a woman who developed a character that I have worked with for the last 40 years, I didn't really develop that many characters at the Groundlings. But I got an audition to do a character. And once I got the part, I had to come up with something. So I did use little bits from a sort of a character that I played at Groundlings and then added the costume and all that. Nothing went together. But it created something very unique because I think really nothing did go together. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, we'll get it pieced together. So what was this audition where somebody said you just have to come up with a character?
It was in the LA Times. It was an ad for a local TV station, KHJ, looking for a horror host to replace the recently deceased at that time, horror host they'd had for years, Sinister Seymour. Do you guys ever remember seeing him in L.A.?
I don't. I've been in L.A. my whole life. I definitely remember 93 KHJ, right?
Yeah.
93 KHJ, when everything was a jingle and just get burnt into your psyche. And I also remember you at K-Rock for a while, the station, me and Jimmy and Dr. Drew and so many, Carson Daly and so many others started at as well.
Yeah.
So you had this kind of radio background as well.
I did.
You came up with the character to replace Sinister
Steve.
Seymour.
Sinister Seymour.
Is that where Elvira, that's where the beginnings of Elvira?
Yes, they were very, very lowly. It was like the B-rated, lowest budget TV show on earth. It looks like it was shot in somebody's basement, which it practically was. It was shot between the noon news and the news at 5. And so we had like this stretch of time, had to get the show in between there. They only had one studio. And it was really cheap, low budget, and cheesy, as I mentioned. And I really didn't think it was going to last very long. It wasn't that promising for an acting gig. So I was shocked and amazed the other day when I realized 40 years had gone by.
And that was like you were doing interstitial stuff between clearable old movies, right? That they didn't have to pay much for.
Right. They actually had a pretty amazing library of films because KHJ was owned by RKO Pictures.
Oh, wow.
We had a huge film library, but old horror movies from the 50s, 60s, and 70s mainly. So they were all pretty, pretty bad. It was rare if we got a good one. But the fact that they were bad was actually a good thing for me because my writing partner, John Paragon, as I mentioned, and I could make fun of the old bad ones. And that's what started us on that whole thing about riffing on the bad movies.
It's part of the act.
Did you become, de facto became this crazy sex symbol in Los Angeles almost immediately? I mean, were you looking at yourself as a comedian and you became a sex symbol or was there a plan?
Well, I had been a showgirl formerly in Las Vegas at the Dunes Hotel. So when we came up with a costume, we just decided to go with that, you know, and show as much as possible. So we, my very best friend at the time, a guy named Robert Redding, and I came up with a costume that would be really, you know, sexy. I mean, we knew that would be good for ratings, right? as they say, sex sells, and that worked. But I certainly consider myself a comedian, but I think the combination of the sex and the comedy and the spooky, you know, kind of worked in my favor.
Did you ever feel like you were getting sort of trapped in the character? I mean, I think we were talking about Paul Reubens, talking about Pee Wee Herman. I don't know what his thoughts about that were. I mean, on one hand, you're making oodles of cash. On the other hand, this is kind of who you are for a long period of time. I sort of believe that situation where he got caught in Dade County, like whacking off at the Peep Show or at the Rated X movie. I always thought that was him just wanting out.
Yeah.
Like in a weird way.
Probably at the time, they look back years later, like, oh, I was an iconic character. Everyone knows, you know, this touched lives or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that wouldn't have been a problem for him at all had he not been the host of a children's show.
That's a good point.
I mean, there are many other people who have gotten caught doing that, and it didn't really affect their career at all. I think, who was it? Fred Willard or someone like that? Some big comedian got caught doing the same thing.
Well,
didn't affect him at all.
Yeah, Fred wandered into an establishment that I think he thought was a tiki bar.
What is going on here?
And look, you can say that sounds pretty spurious to me, but I will tell you, as a guy who was doing shows at the Two Roads Theater in like Toluca Lake, and Fred wandered in one night to watch us. He has a rich history of wandering in.
There's no gay sex here.
Well, I think to your point, there's the notion that maybe he unconsciously wanted an escape hatch from
that's
his character.
What I thought, but that's
maybe. I mean, perhaps I can understand that. But knowing Paul very, very well, I know that he and I really don't want to escape these characters because, unlike almost anybody else in show business, and that would be all the characters in Star Wars or Star Trek or any movie franchise you can name, Paul and I both own our brands. We own them 100%.
That's a good point.
So sure, we could escape and make much, much less money if we did. So for him and I, we can do licensing, merchandising with our characters and make a ton of money, a lot more than we would just going from acting job to acting job as other characters.
We were discussing last week in the book your relationship, I'm holding my fingers up in air quotes, with Wilt Chamberlain many years ago. Can you take us through what's in the book regarding Wilt?
Oh, dear God. Yeah, no, that's a real low point in the book. I have met Wilt in Las Vegas when I was 17. He was dating my roommate, who was also a showgirl in my show at the Dunes. And so I knew him then. I ran into him again in Italy when I lived over there and I was in a rock band. I met him later in Los Angeles because he used to have parties all the time. I'd see him up at the Playboy Mansion because I went there frequently because I was in Playboy Models. And so I see Wilt through the years and we were very, very friendly. I called him Uncle Wilty. In fact, what I thought was good, we're good friends. One time, finally, I went to his party and he sexually assaulted me. I did not believe it was even happening. Obviously, I didn't report it because who's going to take the word of an out of work actress against a, you know, basketball superstar?
This is pre Elvira.
Oh, yeah. Way, way many years before when I was in my early 20s. Yeah. So it was a really bad situation. I'm sure many women that you will talk to have been through situations like this with other people, maybe not so famous, but happens all the time. And in this particular situation, there was really nothing I could do. I never told anybody about it, with the exception of my ex-husband. And now I'm telling everybody about it because he's dead and I'm not.
By the way, this is told in her new memoir, Yours Cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark.
Yes, thank you.
So, Dan, did you ever run into him after the assault?
No, never saw him again. As a matter of fact, went out of my way to stay away from where he might be. Never ran into him, and he died not long after that. You know, he was always bragging also. He had a book that he said he had 20,000 sexual conquests, you know. And it made me really wonder, how many of those were actually consensual? Had to wonder about that.
Well, the good news is if you do want to avoid Wilt Chamberlain, it's kind of doable. Like, you can walk into a restaurant or a club. You want to avoid Patton Oswalt. Good luck.
Yeah.
You pops up anywhere.
You have to do three laps just to make sure he's not there.
Right.
What's on the horizon? It's Wilt.
In the book, talking about going out on a date with Elvis Presley. You want to walk us through that one?
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't, I call it a date. Maybe I do. I don't know. It was meeting Elvis in Las Vegas when I was there, and he came to see my show and then invited myself and some of the other girls back to a party that he was having at the hotel where he was playing. And I ended up just basically talking to him the whole night, doing nothing but talking and talking alone with Elvis about every subject you can imagine. And he gave me some advice that changed my life. He told me to get the hell out of Vegas, which I did. I thought it was my dream that I'd accomplished. For years, I'd wanted to be a showgirl in Vegas, and I'd finally accomplished that. And he said, no, this is not a good town for a young girl. You really should leave. So if it wasn't for Elvis, you know, I started out as the youngest showgirl in Las Vegas. I would now be the oldest showgirl in Las Vegas. So thank God I met him. He changed my life in a big way.
How'd you get to Vegas? You're from Kansas, right?
Yeah, I was born on a farm in Kansas. And then eventually I went with my parents when I was in my senior year of high school. I went with my mom and dad, my sisters, to California. And we stopped in Vegas on the way. I talked them into taking me to see one of the big, they call them Tits and Feathers show. In Las Vegas. And I dressed up so I could look 21. So I looked, you know, extra eyelashes, a little wiglet on top of my head and high heels and push-up bra. And someone came over to me and asked me if I was a showgirl. I was afraid I was going to be arrested because I was only 17 and wasn't supposed to be in a, you know, place that was serving alcohol. And the next thing I know, the dance captain came out, asked me if I wanted to audition because they had a show opening in a few months and they were auditioning the next day. So I was basically just sort of discovered there. I auditioned, I got the part, went back to Colorado Springs, which is where we lived at that point, and finished high school and then split like right after that to go back to Vegas and do the show.
Who
it was very bizarre.
But you were 17 when you went to Vegas.
Yeah. My parents had to sign a waiver. That was quite an ordeal. They had to get a lawyer, sign a waiver that was okay for me. I could not go in a casino. I couldn't drink. I couldn't gamble. I couldn't walk in the front door. But I could dance on stage topless. So don't ask. Those were the 60s. What can you say?
Topless at 17.
Yep. Afraid so.
Now, one of my favorite movies is Showgirls. Realistic depiction of what goes on behind the scenes there?
Completely unrealistic. There's not one thing in that movie that's anything like it.
Don't ruin it for me.
I love that movie, though. It's so ridiculous.
It's perfect. I know. Elvira should break down the game film on that film.
Right.
So Elvis tells you to get out of Vegas. And Elvis is probably... I don't know where he is at that point, but he's probably maybe regretting his move to Vegas. I do not know. Colonel probably forced him over there. So, by the way, when is that Colonel Tom Parker, Tom Hanks, Elvis movie coming out? I'm into that. I really want
to. Me too. I want to see that. More.
So, this one?
How old are you when you moved to L.A.?
Let's see. After I left Vegas, I moved to France, then Italy, then I moved back to Miami Beach, where I worked at the Playboy Club, and then I moved to LA when I was about, I'd say I was about 23 when I got here. And I decided instead of singing and dancing, I would go into acting. So that's where that all began.
And was this essentially, take it in the spirit in which it's intended, but... you were so beautiful and statuesque, and it was a time when you could just go, I'm doing this because I look like this. I mean, you have to be able to dance. You have to have ability. But, I feel like your life from 15 to 25 was not the same as many people I know who wouldn't look as good in the outfit.
Well, yeah, definitely helped. I always felt I had a pretty good body, so I definitely utilized my best assets to get ahead. Also, I don't think that works for you unless you really, really have something to back it up. And I studied acting. I studied comedy. I was very serious about it. And as you know, like I said, I was in the Groundlings for 4.5 years. Yeah, it helps. I certainly wouldn't deny that. It helps to look good, whether you're a man or a woman in Hollywood. I think you work more unless you want to be a character actor.
Who was it? The Groundlings must have been newish back then. I don't think there were that. I ended up at the Groundlings in the later, midder 80s. But they hadn't been around too long before you got there, right?
I think they started in 1973, and they were at a different theater than the one they're currently at on Melrose Avenue. And so they hadn't been around for very long. And a lot of the members that were in there then were founding members. And when I joined, Lorraine Newman had just gotten this brand new show nobody had ever heard of called Saturday Night Live, and she was just heading off to do that show. So that kind of kicked off the Groundlings' popularity, you know, with Lorraine, I would say.
Right.
Speaking of the Groundlings and some of your old castmates, I, along with, I'm sure, everyone, have a deep love for Phil Hartman. You obviously talk about him in your book a little bit. Can you talk about what he was like, what it was like to work with him, seeing that budding star at the time?
Well, when I went in the Groundlings, Phil was just like, he was just like the star of the Groundlings. I mean, everybody wanted to be like him. And when I first was in there, I remember, oh my God, Phil Hartman talked to me. Phil Hartman looked my way. You know, he was just the star, with Paul Rubens, a very close second. But Phil was very soon plucked off the stage to go to Saturday Night Live too. He was, an incredible person. I ended up to be very, very close with Phil through all of his marriages and through his children, and spent a lot of time with Phil. Super gigantic loss for me and for the whole world in general, because he was just such an authentic, kind, funny, talented person.
Yeah, I've never heard a bad word about that guy.
Never, and you never will, I guarantee it.
And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times when guys, what I notice from hanging around with a lot of sketch people, the ones who do the most characters are the least interesting or friendly or anything when they're being themselves. Maybe it's a little Jim Carrey syndrome or something, but they do, all these characters were developed so you didn't have to deal with the authentic them,
sure,
kind of thing. Yeah. But Phil seemed to be a genuinely great guy as him, and then also then came the characters.
Yeah, and he wasn't one of those comedians, which I know a lot of these kind of comedians, the ones who are always on. You know, he was just a completely authentic person. When he wasn't on stage, he was just a regular guy, so down to earth. I mean, a lot of comedians, not so much the improv people, but the stand-up comedians, I've known quite a few, and they just can't turn it off, you know?
I just spent the weekend in Detroit with one of those and had the super uncomfortable exchange at the end. So I was doing this corporate gig, and one of the comedians was sort of with us for the lunch, and he was going a mile a minute, and continued. And at the very end of the night, after the show and the gig and everything was open, was finished, the guy put the whole thing together, said, I just want to take a second and raise a toast. And the comedian chimed in from the group, and he just went, you've been talking for 2 days. You haven't stopped talking for, you know, when it's built up, you know, the worst is when you're looking the other way, you know, you're on the last nerve, but you don't know it. You don't get the incremental.
Yeah.
It's basically,
come on, Jim Brewer, read the room.
The time Roberta Messick hit me in the cars because she'd been building and building and building, and she didn't say a word. And at some point, the hand came off the steering wheel. You know what I mean? You're there.
Yeah.
Like this, this guy was like, I want to raise a toast. I want to thank everyone who supported the charity. And this guy started into a shtick and he's like, stop it.
Enough.
No more. It's 2 days. It's two days. 2 days of nonstop talk. Now you have to stop. You never want to be that guy.
To your point.
Well, people are exhausting.
Yeah. So yes. So, so I assume then you hung out with Phil Hartman, you know, with your then husband and with his last wife.
Oh, yeah. All the time, because we had kids the same age. And we spent every holiday together, every single holiday for so many years. We spent with Phil and whatever wife he was married to at the time. He had we always joked with him about that. He did have three marriages. But he was we spent a lot of time. And strangely, my ex-husband had known Phil from Malibu, and they were big fishing and surfing and boating guys together. So they spent a lot of time just going out to Catalina spearfishing and stuff. So
you could just say they were Gentiles. I'll get it.
No. They were.
Hey, speaking of relationships, reading here that you've been in a relationship with a woman for 19 years. So
yeah.
How does that work? Because I don't feel like I may. I mean, the day is young.
You're not gender fluid, Adam?
No.
Very not. Solid.
I don't like other dudes fluid.
Right,
that's
there you
my,
go.
That's part of the reason I'm not gender fluid. I don't want the dudes fluid on me. Yeah, I know. It's gross, right?
Sorry, Cassandra.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I'm with a girl. It works. I I was married for 25 years. I got tired of putting the toilet seat down, and I switched to, jump the other side of the fence.
But that's not something that's not something you were thinking about before that. I mean, it must have been rattling around in your head somewhere.
Never. Read my book. You'll see that I pretty much was with nothing but men from the time I hit puberty until I was 50 years old. That never was rattling around in my head. Never had any experiences with women. I just met this one particular woman who I became very, very good friends with, and it turned into a romantic relationship. And I was very confused by it. I didn't know what the hell was going on, because I'm not attracted to women. I will admit she's quite androgynous. She's was a bodybuilder and an athlete. She was a track runner, a bodybuilder, and a cyclist in the Olympics. I mean, so she's very athletic and quite androgynous. And I don't know. She just appealed to me. And, when you get over 50 and you go through menopause, you're not really thinking about having kids or any of those things. So it was just wanting to be in a relationship with a person who cared about you and liked you and that you could relate to.
Is this tantamount to, I'll put it to Teresa as well.
All right.
There's this thing that celebrities do, which is they date other celebrities in their 20s and then their 30s. And then at some point you kind of realize that Johnny Depp isn't all he's cracked up to be. You know, it sounds good. And then at a certain point you end up just settling in with an architect.
Yeah, a civilian.
Or an electronics engineer or something.
Right.
You go, I just want calm. I want normal. Yes. I don't want any of this anymore. Is that... and then there's also an element with women, which is I don't know that they even need to be terribly attracted to women. They can just be kind of done with dudes.
Well, I recently saw the CNN documentary about the female soccer players. I don't know if y'all saw it.
I saw the trailer for it.
I'm squarely straight, but Megan Rapinoe, that's how you say it, she's just flat out hot.
All right.
Until
she fucking starts talking. And
oh,
then
come
it's
on.
Like, oh, shut up, Miss Press. Please shut up.
So I thought of that when you were describing it. Like, male or female, you can just see a person who is very attractive to you.
It's true. It's like dudes being attracted to, as a while ago, but like to Mick Jagger or to David Bowie. I mean, didn't you ever think they were kind of hot? Come on, Adam.
No. Here's where our attraction. Here's how the dude attraction works. I bet that guy gets a ton of pussy. I am now attracted to him for his ability to be a poon hound.
Right.
That's where the attraction comes in.
Potential wingman.
That's right.
Well, how did you first see this woman? What was the circumstances of your meeting?
Oh, it was kind of strange. I thought she was a man. I was working out at Gold's Gym in Hollywood, and every day I'd be on the treadmill warming up for my workout, and I'd see this guy crossing the gym that had this pulled down beanie and these big muscles and tattoos. And I was going, damn, he is so hot. So this went on for months. I'd see him. Everybody stared at him. Everybody was like in love with him. And one day I go into the ladies' room and boom, crash right straight into him. And it turned out it was a woman. And so we started becoming friends. He was at the gym. She was at the gym. I can't see. I don't even know what the hell she is anymore. And she became my trainer when my trainer left for another gig. She became my trainer. So for six years, she was my trainer. Damn, my notifications. And we became friends. And after I got divorced, our friendship developed into a relationship. I am so sorry about the freaking notifications. I know I'll turn them off, and you know what? I'll cut this whole thing interview off. I did it earlier today already. I tried to turn it off.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way.
I'm sorry.
I'm scared to touch any buttons mid interview.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like everything's gonna. And I've done it. I've done it before. I think I had Dr. Drew trying to call me when I was doing an interview once. It was attempting to like put him on hold. It's undoable if you're over 50. As we are. Well, the good news is we've come to the end of our allotted time. So I'll give a plug for sure. Yours cruelly, Elvira, Memoirs of the Mistress of the Dark. And it's available now on Amazon and everywhere else. Cassandra, thanks so much for joining us and being a open book, pardon the pun.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thanks, Adam. It was great to see you again. And thanks to both of you, too.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Say hi to Dr. Drew. I haven't seen him in years. I just love him.
Well, when you're a celebrity and you haven't seen Dr. Drew in years, that's a good thing. You want to say that. Yeah, you don't want to say hi to Dr. Drew and tell him thanks.
Yeah.
30 meetings.
You don't want that.
Days.
That's bad. Thanks, Cassandra.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All right, let's see. I got Rosebud Baker, comedian. It's a very funny stand-up special I watched last night. It's going to be joining us in a couple of few. First, I'll tell you about Candid. They're specialists, I should say, for everything. Mechanics, roofers, plumbers. When you want to fix your uneven, crooked teeth, you need an orthodontist. Candid. Invisible, comfortable, and removable aligners. Unlike poorly reviewed or insanely priced clear aligner companies that use general dentists, Candid only works with orthodontists, the same experts in tooth movement and the same folks that my parents couldn't afford when I was growing up. You can now. They work with you. They are experts in movement of teeth, which is what we're trying to do here. So again, not the general dentist. And they'll work with you start to finish. They'll monitor you remotely. You can book an appointment at Candid Studio. They have them near you. Or you can do it from the comfort and convenience of your home. Average treatment is just 6 months and costs thousands less than traditional braces and includes free teeth whitening. It's Candid. Right, Dawson?
Candid can help you get the straighter, brighter smile you've always wanted. Right now, you can save $75 on your Candid starter kit when you get started from home, or you can book an appointment at a Candid studio near you today. Go to CandidCO.com/Adam and use code Adam. That's CandidCO.com/Adam. Code Adam. Take advantage of this limited time offer to save $75 on your starter kit. CandidCO.com/Adam. Code Adam.
Well, Rosebud Baker, the laughter maker. She's smart. She'd run with that shit. Going to join us right after this.
Pluto TV is playing the biggest movies every night this summer for free. Watch hit movies like The Matrix, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Scary Movie, Runaway Bride, and more all summer long. Check out the biggest stars like The Rock, Keanu Reeves, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and more. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of free TV channels in English and Spanish featuring TV shows, news, sports, comedy, and more, all for free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device, including Android and Apple smartphones. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.